Wretched Ahmed here on Gadigal land with the full story. This summer, one of the oldest and fiercest rivalries in sport continues as England take on Australia in the Ashes. It's a contest that's been going on for more than 140 years, and this time it takes place on Australian soil. Australia have had the upper hand in recent times, but England will try to reverse that streak as they attempt to win a test match in Australia for the first time in almost 15 years. To help you follow all the action, we'll be replaying episodes of the Guardian Ashes weekly podcast throughout the summer.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Ashes Weekly, supported by Qantas, the spirit of Australia. I'm Max Rushton. This is our preview of the first Ashes Test and the series, which starts in Perth on Friday. The grizzled old Australians have been hard at it in the Sheffield Shield in preparation. The English have had a game against themselves and a round of golf. Lots to get into. The impact of Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood's absence versus England's, at the moment, touchwood, 100% fit pace attack. Can Joe Root get a century? Can England win their first test in Australia since January 2011? And if they can win a test, what about a series? Can Bazball work on a bouncy Perth wicket? Will Mitchell Starc basically win the whole thing with the first ball like he did in 2021? Lots of questions and an excellent brackets, almost balanced panel. Welcome to the Guardian Ashes Weekly. On the panel today, then, cricket correspondent Ali Martin. Hey, Ali.
Hello, Max. Good to hear from you and see you. All's well here in Perth. We've got about 9,000 England fans jetting in, apparently. So, looking forward to this one.
Guardian senior sports writer Andy Bull back in London. Hey, Andy.
Hello. I am back in London. I'm the odd one out. I'm stuck here where it's snowing right now, amazingly enough.
Yeah, right. Oh, good. That's exciting. And with me for the whole thing, unless, of course, we fall out over musical cricketing differences, Jeff Lemon. Hey, Jeff.
I'm looking forward to it. I'd like to see what's going to break the band up. Where do the tensions come in? You know, biopic style. Like, where is it by the second act, the end of the second act, that we're tearing each other's throats out? Let's make it happen.
I'm very non-confrontational, to be honest. Yeah, I'll just go with, you know, whatever. I'm a people pleaser.
Yeah,
so, like, you can walk all over me.
More than anything, that might be what gets me really steamed.
Well, I'm pleased to help you out in that situation. Let's start with this. I alluded to it in the intro. TS says, do the panel think we will at least get through the first ball of the series before losing all hope? I turned off the TV and went straight to bed when Rory Burns was bowled, first ball in 2021. Ali, give us hope. Can we make it to the second ball?
I think England will win the toss and bowl, so it's going to be all good on that front. But it's funny, you mentioned that Rory Burns one. We spoke to him a couple of days before that test match. He was out here covering that tour, and we asked him if he'd thought about the first ball, and he gave a very sort of firm no. And well, we all know how it played out.
Probably should have done.
Yeah, that was kind of how it felt at the time.
Yeah, I was in the Channel 9 offices with a lot of Australians going, I think we've got a chance this year. Maybe not this time. Beyond that, Jeff, because hopefully it will go beyond the first delivery. It'll still be even then. How are you feeling going into it?
I mean, I would have said you should turn the TV off just because Rory Burns is going out there to bat. Nobody needed to see that. Things are a bit different this time around. I think, as Ali said, England do like to bowl first and Australia like to bat first, so the toss might be relatively ceremonial at that stage. But I'm excited. I'm excited that Australia are depleted, as silly as that might sound, because I want to see England have to go for it. You know, I want to see them have to pick the side that's all pace, throw everything at Australia, get a bit ridiculous, go over the top. In terms of, like, make everything happen, be excessive. This is what we want to see from this England side, because they've talked it up for a few years. So, okay, well, let's see it actually happen on grass.
I can just see that, Andy, talking about the toss, and you can just see, you know, England bowling and then, you know, Australia getting a decent first innings and all the inverted commas dinosaurs saying, you've got to bat first. Why have they done this? As we've heard so many times during this Bazball era.
Yeah, I was slightly alarmed that both Jeff and Ali have already decided what's going to happen at the toss just because of the record at the toss at this ground, which I'm sure they can both tell you all about, which is that everyone wins the toss, everyone bats first, and everyone who does that wins the test. And that's happened for all five matches here. So, that's a little bit alarming already.
But you think, Ali, that's what England will do?
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's a couple of there's a bit of time for the pitch to bake. We're not even entirely sure at this stage of England's 11. But Stokes, yep, he's a big fan of. He doesn't really say we'll have a bowl first. He likes to say we'll chase, and that kind of is indicative of the kind of mentality of this England team.
Yeah, and I mean, and it has worked for them, Jeff. Mm. And you wonder if there is a time where they go, actually, as Andy said, you know, the record, the stats in Perth, they're so obvious that you bat first, that maybe this is the time. I don't know.
Maybe, but a lot of it depends on what kind of surface you get dished up at Perth. So we've only had the five tests here. We moved away from the Wacker. It was the 2017-18 Ashes was the last Wacker test, if I'm remembering rightly, with England playing there when we had an unusual squall of rain, and then there was that wet spot on the pitch, and Josh Hazlewood was hitting the wet spot and getting the ball to burrow under Bairstow's bat, and all the rest of it going on over at the Wacker. Over here, it's been erratic. I remember watching, you know, these Perth tests over the years. The first one when India played, that pitch was quite vicious. It was cracking up. There was very erratic bounce. Mohammad Shami was very dangerous on that surface. Australia managed to win the game in the end. Virat Kohli made a great 100. But then you had a West Indies test when the pitch was pretty sleepy and West Indies were very much outmatched, but they managed to take it into the fifth day. Their opening pair, Brathwaite and Chandrapal, were batting long in that test and able to take a fair bit of time out of the game. And then you've got a pitch like the one last year against India where wickets absolutely tumbled the first day and a half. Australia and India were both bowled out cheaply. And then India went big after that. It was deeper into the game. Kohli again made 100. And so it set things up so that Australia were so far behind the game. So if that's the kind of route that England want to take where they're looking at chasing a big target in the fourth innings on a relatively flat track, if they get a pitch like they had last year, well, that might well be the case, and they might find themselves chasing by late day three even, rather than day four when the pitch hasn't started to break up at the other end of the 5 days.
England have named the 12, right, Andy? They've included Shobashir in that. Do you think he'll be in the 11, or is that all totally dependent on what this pitch looks like?
I struggle to believe that they haven't made their minds up yet. I wonder if they're simply keeping their options open for the sake of not showing all the cards that they have in their hand. The interesting thing about playing a spinner in this game is that Nathan Lyon, who I know is in no way equivalent to Shoaib Bashir in terms of his accomplishments, but he's got an amazing record at this ground, and that game, he was man of the match in that first India test that Jeff was just talking about. So I don't know. I'd feel a little trepidatious about going in without any spinner in the side at all, simply because of that. I think Lyon's got coming up for 30 wickets at 20 at this ground. But then you do want to see that all-out pace barrage too. If England are going to win, it's not going to be by Shoaib Bashir bowling Australia out, is it? It's probably going to be by Mark Wood and Jofra Archer doing most of the wicket-taking. So yeah, I suspect they will pick an all-out pace attack, is my feeling on that.
Ali?
I was at Nets yesterday, which is England's first Nets session at the Optus, and as well as sort of batting away the flies and getting a bit of sunburn on the top of my feet, watched Mark Wood steaming in, and his left leg is heavily strapped. The scan that he had on that hamstring injury, there was no hamstring injury, essentially. The scan, as we were kind of briefed as we kind of managed to collar a coach as they went past, was essentially just to reassure him. You know, it's been such a long time out of Test cricket for him and he's a upbeat, bubbly kind of guy, but he is also can be a bit nervous, understandably, given the sort of his record in terms of injuries over the years. So it was more a kind of reassurance, but nevertheless, I think that they will be wanting to use Mark Wood in as short, you know, kind of short bursts as possible, and possibly, you know, maybe 12 overs a day, ideally for, you know, three sort of four over bursts. And also with a sort of those sort of slight concerns about potential for fragility is that there's cover for him if the worst does happen. You know, there would still be four seamers there, of which, you know, Stokes is arguably England's best seamer. He certainly was England's best seamer in the summer, but operating as the fifth as the fifth seamer in this particular attack. So I can see them going that way, but it does make me a little bit nervous any time a team goes into a test match without a spinner, because you know, Perth is very hot at the moment. It was actually a little bit overcast and rainy yesterday. We had a little bit of rain today, but generally when the sun's been out, it's been very hot. And the pitch has been exposed, and I just wonder, you know, if I was Australia, I would be hoping that there is a bit of turn in that pitch, because it is one area where they have an absolute clear advantage over England, as you say, with that Lyon-Bashir matchup. So, yeah, that's my reading of it, that all pace is probably the likely bet. But it is interesting that Bashir's in the 12. It might just be to keep him interested, because they are going to need him this series. Mm. You know, want to make him feel like he's part of that first team shake-up, even if he misses out here for tactical reasons.
Yeah, I reckon it's that. I reckon it's that, Ellie. I think it's management. I think it's player management. It seems very unlikely that they'd pick him. I mean, it's well and good to say that every team should have a spinner, and generally I agree with that. You want to have that option. But if we're going to be speaking bluntly, Shoaib Bashir is just not that good. His record's not that good. The fact that he's been fast-tracked into this side is strange. The fact that he's been preferred for so long is strange. Yes, he's tall and he might get bounced, but that doesn't mean that he's going to be able to stand up, and it doesn't mean he'll be able to do the kind of things that Nathan Lyon's been able to do to visiting teams. Bashir's playing away from home. You've got Mark Wood there. You've got the possibility of playing him and Archer. You've got the high risk that either of those two end up injured so easily, because they have done so many times in the past. It seems to me like if you've got them available, if you've got the chance of picking them both in a test match, why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you take that option when you've got it? And like you say, you know, Mark Wood might be, they might be thinking he bowls 20 overs for the test. You know, it might be three spells in the first innings and two in the second, if he gets it right, if he can do the sort of thing he did at Headingley a couple of years ago and come in and really influence the game. And as you say, if he does fall over, then they've got the rest of the seamers there to back it up. I can't see what you get as an advantage. Like, if you're picking your best bowler, who's a better bowler? Who's Australia going to want to face more, Shoaib Bashir or Mark Wood? Pretty easy to answer that one.
But there's a danger, I guess, if Mark Wood's only doing 20 overs. You know, I mean, how many is Jofra Archer going to do? Like, someone's got to do a lot of overs here.
But those two are basically one bowler. You treat those two, you picked those two to do the allotment of one fast bowler, and then the other okay. Quicks will do the rest, would be my read on it.
Right, and the advantage is that you have Stokes, who I guess, Andy, I don't know, like a year or two ago, you sort of wrote, like his bowling was a sort of, you wrote that off. That wasn't going to happen anymore. And this summer, you actually did see, it was sort of extraordinary how good he was.
Yeah, he, like Ali said, he was England's best bowler this summer by actually quite a comfortable distance. Yeah, I don't know if you ever write Stokes off. I think, you know, he's almost the last cricketer I would ever do that to be honest.
No, sure.
Because he's got such a remarkable ability to prove people wrong and to sort of defy the limits, or what ought to be the limits, of his own body. But yeah, it was actually one of the strongest aspects of all England's cricket this summer was his ability to bowl fast. He was bowling faster than we'd seen in a long time. He was also moving the ball a lot too. Again, though, how much bowling do you actually want Ben Stokes to be doing over the course of this series? That's another real live question.
And we haven't mentioned then Atkinson and Cast, Ali, who will have to do a lot of grunt work. But that, is that impolite to them?
No, you could probably say it to their face. They're pretty sound blokes. But I Cast is the one there. He will be the guy who will bowl the donkey overs. But also, I say the donkey overs, he's not bowling donkey overs at sort of low 80s. He will be hovering around mid-80s, trying to push up to the high 80s. And a particularly good bowler. We didn't particularly good bowler with a Kookaburra ball. He's not. It's strange. He was one of those kind of players who he's sort of better suited to overseas cricket. And last winter, we saw him take 27 wickets off the top of my head, which is more in an overseas winter than Stuart Broad or James Anderson ever managed in their sort of decorated career. So he is a Kookaburra ball bowler. He is potentially an away bowler, and he's a particularly handy batsman as well. And he's got a big heart, and he's up for the kind of scrap as well. So it probably is a case of you know, Cast or Bashir possibly for that sort of final spot, if you look at it that way. I think Mark Wood is playing. I think, you know, you have to, at the start of this series, given the two players out for Australia, you have to push all your chips into the middle in terms of your biggest wicket taking bowler. So I think Wood is in. And it's just whether they want the kind of the relief work to be done by Cast pounding away as he does, or Bashir possibly being pounded away himself. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about the missing Australians then, or you know, we might as well do their bowling attack now we've done England's. Like, how big a blow is it Jeff, to have no Cummins and no Hazelwood.
It's enormous. I think it's logarithmic. You know, you're missing one of those big three. Australia can cover for that. You're missing two of them. The effect is multiplied rather than added. And particularly that it's the two right armers. They're the control mechanism that allows Stark to be attacking in the way that he is, to pitch up, to look for swing, to bounce players. You've got the way that Hazelwood's bowled in the white ball stuff over the last few months has been extraordinary. He's, I think out of that three at the moment, he's Australia's best bowler. He's looked the most dangerous. He was getting players out in one day in T20 cricket as though he were bowling in a test match, you know, hard length splice, shoulder of the bat, making them flinch at pace, that kind of thing. And he sort of sets the agenda, I suppose. And the fact that they're able to then have Cummins come in and bowl the seventh or eighth over of an innings and bowl first change and be that sort of partnership breaker bowler behind the other two. I mean, that three works so well. Take Cummins out of that equation and put Boland in. You're not losing a huge amount because Boland has been so effective in that first change position. He's the one who's bowled seventh or eighth over, and he's often got on a run when he's come on to bowl those spells. He's got a real knack of taking multiple wickets in an over or wickets really early in a spell. We saw him take a hat trick in Jamaica only a few months ago. So Boland as the third bowler has been terrific, but he's now got to be the second bowler, which means he's probably taking the new ball. I'm not sure how they'll, you know, could be Doggett to take the new ball, but you would think it would be Boland on seniority. So that's nothing new for him in terms of state cricket for Victoria, but it is a change of role in the test side. And then you've got Brendan Doggett, who's new, and they're talking up how experienced he is, and he's 31, and he's played lots of first-class cricket, and he's a laid-back character and all the rest of it. But how much of that is he actually going to be able to maintain, to keep with him and carry onto the field if you've got that Perth Stadium full? It's never been full for a day of Test cricket before, but apparently it's sold out, so we'll see if everybody shows up. But that should be, what, 55,000, 60,000 people, something like that, for the first day of Test cricket, the first day of an Ashes. That's his Test debut as well. I don't care how laid back you are, it's still going to be tough to try to, you know, keep things together at that stage. So it's a huge ask for this rejigged Australian attack, no matter how confident they've tried to sound in the press conferences. Missing Hazelwood and Cummins is way, way different to missing one of them.
Right, and so, Jeff, does that mean, do you have England as favourites for this test for that reason?
I don't know if they're favourites, but only because England have, in my lifetime, been so expert at losing to Australian teams they shouldn't lose to. And I'm not even sort of saying that to be clever or quirky. It's bizarre to me. Some of the players who've excelled against England in Australia over the years, you know, I mean, Brad Haddin had the best series ever by a batter outside the top six in a series against England in 2013-14. Sean Marsh was the defining player in 2017-18 in the first two test matches. Mitchell Marsh has played defining innings when, you know, he's a much better player now than he was back then when he was playing defining innings against England. Mediocre players in terms of their performance at the time have excelled against England when they've played them in Australia. So I don't necessarily have confidence that England will get it together historically, but this is the test they should win. They should absolutely be considering themselves favourites, and if they don't win this test, then they've dropped what is an absolutely golden opportunity.
Feels like just real English generosity to say, who are you? You're pretty mid-range.
Yep.
You want to be a star?
How would you
come
like
and
to have
play
the
us?
Best day of your career against us? We are willing to give that to you. You know, there's been a real magnanimous streak to some of these England touring teams. And again, I'm not saying it to be a smartass. I'm saying it because I'm kind of frustrated by it, because I've seen England dominate in one series in Australia in living memory, and I've seen Australia dominate every other series. I haven't seen a competitive series in Australia that's an Ashes, and I would really like to. It would be fun.
And so, Andy, do you see it like in a broader sense before we get into the batting lineups? Do you agree with Jeff that this is a massive, like, a golden opportunity for England? Or, Andy, you see it that this series should be like a close one? We should be getting to Sydney 2-2 or something like that?
I think it's absolutely the opportunity. No one's going to look at it and think anything else. And I think Jeff's exactly right in all regards there when he talks about our history of being done by middle-ranking Australian players, getting Andy Bickled, you might call it.
yep.
But I do think it's really different having it in the first test of the series. I think for a guy from that middle rank, like Doggett, to come in to play your first Ashes test, I think that's very different to coming into a team midway through a series when they're already leading, which is kind of what we've seen happen with some of these guys in the past. And I also think that this English team is a very different proposition, and they will be looking to put those players under a hell of a lot of pressure. And you will see that from batsmen like Harry Brook, who will think nothing of A, trying to take down Scott Boland, and B, trying to take down Doggett. That doesn't mean they'll necessarily do it. It may not come off. But there is then a live question about how you handle yourself on that stage with that crowd when a batsman like Harry Brook is playing the sort of stupid shots for six that he's going to try and play to you. The historical thing, I think, is a really interesting question for this team, because we almost forget, I think, that this whole, and I want to call it a revolution, although the word's a bit over the top, but this whole reinvention of English cricket, you know, that comes about in direct response to years of failure that Jeff's talking about. And even if it's not the immediate trigger, those 12 years of failure, a lot of the culture we see that went into those teams, a lot of the things you associate with English Ashes tours, and that's kind of sad general managers and depressed cricketers and batsmen with quirky techniques standing on one leg and random players coming in for debuts in the fifth test. Like, there's a whole, you know, all blurs into one of just, like, real mediocrity. But, you know, this is definitely not that England team. They have their own flaws. There are plenty of them. They're absurd. They're preposterous. They do stupid things. All of that is true. But they are not going to fail in the same way those England teams failed. I can promise you that, if they do fail at all.
Andy's right. They are a team that is sort of unencumbered by history. And a lot of the kind of the sort of reflex fears that we have following English cricket are not ones that have kind of felt by this team itself in particular. And you've only got to sort of look at the sort of semi-recent history of English cricket, that quite often it takes an outsider or new world thinking to sort of, you know, to come into the mother country and kind of shake out that cynicism and that kind of sense of fatalism that can take hold of English cricket. I'm thinking Duncan Fletcher, Andy Flower, Kevin Peterson, Owen Morgan, Trevor Bayliss, and in the current instance, so that's Brendan McCullum, who has managed to get these guys sort of cleansed of that kind of sort of traditional old world English mindset and get them thinking, as Andy said, in a way that is new and different. As he says, it can be absurd and preposterous. It can also be spectacular. And what it tends to do, regardless of results, is throw up some absolutely classic test matches. I can't think of a period in my career or even following England as I did as a backpacker, you know, back in the day, around the world a little bit, of a side that has that kind of capability of just producing games, win or lose, of some absolute nail biters. I'm thinking one run in Wellington, six runs at the Oval just gone in the summer. The Edgbaston win back in 23 when Pat Cummins and Nathan Lyon, you know, managed to pull off that run chase at the end. It's a team that produces great test matches, and just about more than half of them they're ahead of in. So it's going to be cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, aren't you? You can't, I feel like you can no longer just get on Twitter after a brilliant test match and go, who said test match cricket is dead now? Because, you know, but actually the last five tests have all been really good. So I think it might be all right. But I like the idea that the way to make England less English is to make sure there's just enough people that aren't English in or near the side that, you know, means that we lose all the inhibitions that we actually have. Anyway, that'll do for part one. We'll be back in a second.